Yes, good low. Hello, and welcome to Demystifying Detection Dogs with MD Dogs. I'm the founder of MD Dogs, Libby Rockaway, and I'm here with my co-host, Maggie Kudla, owner of Sit, Stay, Lex.
Hi, I'm excited to jump in and discuss all things diabetic alert dog. Go ahead and grab a drink because we can talk about dogs for hours. Literally.
I love that.
On this episode of Demystifying Detection Dogs, we are going to be going over step 8, 9, and 10 of MD Dog Scent Training Book. Last podcast, we went over steps 4 through 7. So if you want any clarity on those, I recommend going back and checking those out. For step 8, this is going to be about the dog learning to paw the actual person. Libby, do you want to go over there's two different parts to this. There's part A and part B that you have carefully curated. I would love it if you would go over at least part A.
Yeah, happy to. So back in step 7, kind of where we left off, is we were eliminating the scent in. And so trying to really work on having the dog alert to the odor, but still it's within a fist. And so, they're at that point still just kind of indicating that they have, I think they're pawing at that point because there's not a scent tin in there, but it's like on your fist. And so you're still presenting your fist to them and it's pretty obvious. And honestly, at that point, if you present a fist without any low blood sugar odor, the dog would probably paw.
Mm-hmm.
So step 8, though, is working on really pawing an actual person. And what we mean by that is in a standing position is how we start it, where the dog is pawing your leg. So instead of pawing your fist as you're kind of knelt down at their height, you're then getting them to gradually switch over to pawing your leg so that if you are, for example, doing the dishes, the dog comes up behind you and is confident enough eventually to alert you by pawing at you so you know to go check. That's kind of the end goal here. But part A is, I'll actually just read it. While standing, hold a low scent sample in your fist against your legs. When the dog sniffs and paws your fist or leg, mark and reward excitedly. So at that point, you're putting your fist down with the scent sample in it, and you're completely okay with the dog pawing at your fist because that's what they've known, right? And everything we do in dog training is very, very much in baby steps. So you're just kind of bending over, putting your fist there with the scent sample inside of it, and taking what the dog offers. And that's what they've known. So this part A should be pretty easy for them because now you're just kind of standing up instead. But part B, which I think, Maggie, you can go over here, is where it starts to get a little bit more difficult for them and you're transitioning to them actually pawing a human and you as like an indication behavior.
Yes. Yeah. Whenever moving to this step, I find that dogs they need that transitional moment where they mm-hmm. get to learn that, oh, like it's not just about the saliva on cotton.
Yeah.
But it's also a part of like, oh, I have to paw a person because I smell the saliva on cotton. Mm-hmm. And that's just can be a little bit rough, I find, for some dogs to like move to this point of, oh, here's a scent sample. Now I've pawed the scent sample hundreds of times at this point. Mm-hmm. Now you have to get to where they're comfortable hitting you instead of the scent sample.
Yeah.
The best way to go about it is just gradually increasing how high the mm-hmm. scent sample is. So like Libby has a lot of her little Cocker Spaniels, so it's relatively easy. You can probably do it like knee height and then they still won't be able to hit it.
Not too difficult.
But getting them comfortable with them pawing and even just slightly reaching. We don't want our dogs to jump on us. That's make sure you don't create that as an alert behavior. I really want it to just be a singular, if you're doing the pawing alert, make sure that they're just hitting your leg. Whenever they hit your leg, then you mark and reward it. So mark with a clicker. You can mark with your yes. Mm-hmm. Anything that you have to mark the behavior that you specifically want.
Mm-hmm.
With this, Libby, if you find the dog is a little lackluster about their willingness to paw, mm-hmm. would you say just like try to see if they'll figure it out at this step, or would you recommend going back to like later steps where we're focusing on pawing at the sample? Mm.
Yeah, that's a good point. So if like in part A, you know, you're standing up and you have the scent sample in your fist, which is the cue that you were giving them before in step 7, but they're just like not really getting it, then I'd say definitely go back, right? Because it shouldn't be that big of a difference for them. Mm-hmm. And so usually what we see is when a dog isn't getting a step, it's because they just don't have quite a solid enough understanding, because it's all about the confidence.
Yeah.
If you do 1,000 repetitions of one thing, the 1,001st repetition, the dog is pretty darn confident about.
Yeah.
You know, if you do 10 repetitions in the 11th repetition, sometimes the dog is like, I think I'm doing the right thing, right?
Yeah.
So usually you can fix it by just doing more repetitions at an easier stage, where you just boost that confidence up. But this step is hard. Like part A is not hard, but part B is where you like let them sniff the sample, and then you really quickly move the sample up so that as they go to paw it, they accidentally paw you. And this is essentially a form of capturing. Like with capturing as a dog training method, you're marking something that the dog is doing, and eventually after enough repetitions, they understand. But it's not luring and it's not really shaping. So what you're really doing is you're saying, hey, you're used to pawing my fist. I'm going to put my fist against my leg. You're going to paw my fist. Oops, I just moved my fist, but you happened to paw my leg. And I'm going to say yes and reward that. And after enough times, the dog's like, oh, turns out that works too. But this is where it does get a little trickier, I think, you know, especially for self-trainers who aren't dog trainers. It does require the right timing. You have to say yes right away. You have to acknowledge when the dog is not getting it and when you need to go back and build up their confidence.
Yeah. Because I would probably take like a lackluster paw. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then, and like see if that continues. Like I would take like maybe 2 reps of a lackluster paw, or like not enthusiastic, and see maybe they're just questioning it, or they're trying to problem solve it. Maybe 3 reps. I don't know. It depends on the dog. But if after like 3 reps, let's say, and the dog is not doesn't have the same enthusiasm for the pawing as they did in previous steps, where they're like, oh yeah, I'm happy to go paw.
Yeah.
Then I'd probably go back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Usually what I like, my goal with this is that they're incredibly confident the entire time.
Yeah.
Because they're pawing you and they don't even realize that you moved the scent sample.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, yeah, I'm like, I'm going to hit it with my paws. Here we go. And they're like, oh, you moved it, but I'm too busy eating my hot dog to really notice.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah, I find this one, if it should go smoothly, but if it doesn't, then it's just going backwards a little bit. Yeah. I find in all dog training, it is 100% about foundation stuff versus the whole big fun thing. If you are struggling with this step, I would just go back and add more enthusiasm. We go over that in the last podcast of just enthusiasm, enthusiasm, enthusiasm.
Yeah.
And that'll help out your pup to be able to be like, oh my gosh, I love this scent. I'll paw literally anything I can get close to that has a scent related to it.
Yeah, exactly. And that's exactly what we want. The one other thing we have on here is contamination wise. So this is after we have eliminated the scent tin, because what we don't want is we don't want to be doing all of these steps teaching the dog to alert to metal scent tins.
Yes.
Because you can very easily accidentally do that. So we do want to eliminate the scent tin, but that means that you are contaminating your scent sample.
Yes.
And so Maggie and I, we both, you know, one thing that we do here is we use one scent sample and we cut it into 3 to 4 pieces. So we sterilize a pair of scissors and cut it into 4 pieces, put it in individual baggies, label it, knowing that that is all one sample. But that way we can use that one sample multiple times and we can contaminate it. You toss it afterwards. Because if it's been in your grubby hands, even if you just washed your hands, maybe it's going to smell like coconut hand wash, or it's going to smell like Dawn dish soap. It doesn't matter how clean, in quotes, we think our hands are. They all are contaminated with something. And so after a step like this, we have to throw it away. We have to toss it and not use it again. But that, makes it kind of a pain because then you're going through samples pretty regularly.
Yeah.
And so,
as a type one, I mean, the chances of being able to make samples are higher.
Yep.
We are reliant on clients that are purchasing dogs or people that are kind enough
to donate.
I plugged this last time. If you love helping nonprofits and you are a type 1 diabetic and you want to send in your samples, we will send out a kit.
Yes.
Exactly how to go about it, making samples and sending them in to us so that we can use them to train the dogs. message on Instagram at mddogs.livy or at mddogs, preferably at mddogs.livy, because Livy, I don't think, looks at the mddogs one very often.
Not very often.
Or on Facebook or any means.
Email.
We would be more than enthusiastic about you helping us. But
we will send you a kit.
Right.
That'd be great.
And all the steps on how to do everything. So,
yeah.
But little plug. But yeah, contamination, important to think about with your scent sample. Last time we talked about flooding the scent sample in water. Either tossing it into the trash can outside immediately. When I lived in an apartment where I didn't really want to go all the way out to a trash can, I flooded it with water, scrubbed it between my hands with Dawn dish soap, and then flooded it again, and then threw it out in just like hopes that I eliminated all the low blood sugar. So odor that is on it, or saliva. But yes, don't leave it just hanging around.
Yep.
And then wash your hands after, obviously.
Good point.
Wash your hands is very important in that process. Anything you want to add about this step?
No, I think that's pretty good. I think this is one that it does take a little bit of time and the right timing of the trainer. But for a lot of people, once they get to this stage, they're getting pretty confident about like their training skills.
That's true.
And as always, you know, you can contact a trainer, whether it's us or somebody else. Especially like even if you don't contact us, other trainers, if you give them these free resources, they'll be able to put the pieces together and figure it out and be able to help you along.
Yeah, I think if you go to any trainer and they do any type of marker training.
Good point. Yeah, marker training positive reinforcement.
Yeah, positive reinforcement. If they have marker training in their background, and that's essentially – they can take you through the steps of timing-wise. With marker training, like if you want to teach your dog sit, you mark as soon as their bum hits the ground, stuff like that. That is going to help you in – making sure the dog has that clarity. Clicker training was invented to help the communication process with the dog go a lot smoother and a lot faster. Like, yes, you can train your dog without clicker training, but especially in this unique, more advanced form of training where we were creating service dogs. This is surgeon level dogs.
It's another level.
It's another level. And so timing is important. So if you have a trainer in your area, you've done scent training with any type of training, basic obedience, which I recommend going to group classes with your service dog, you will learn how to do your timing. I'm sure your trainer will be happy to discuss with you about timing further. Don't be afraid to ask questions to your trainer. Awesome. Okay.
Great.
Move on to
the next one.
Step 9. This is testing your dog's understanding.
Wait, no.
Oh,
this one is.
I lied. My book went a little far when I clicked the button. We're in step 9, which is learning based on scent alone.
We still like this one.
Yeah, we like this one.
Step 10 we don't like, but that's.
Hold out for the next 10 we'll minutes, and then we'll let you know what we don't like about step 10.
We'll get there for the drama.
Cliffhanger. okay, Libby.
Yeah.
Learning based on scent alone. What was your first step of this process?
Okay, well, my first step is to provide a disclaimer that says this step is hard, and we are in the midst of creating MD Dogs video series 3.0, which will break this down into smaller steps because this one is leads to frustration for humans and dogs. But we're still going to talk about it because you can still successfully train a diabetic alert dog using these methods, and ultimately, like, these are all good things to do. It probably is just, like, 5 steps instead of 1. But after all of that disclaiming, in general, what this step is about is alerting on the scent alone and not the human behavior of presenting the step. So in the last one, what we talked about is you're bending down with a scent sample in your fist. This is like a clear training session to your dog. And you're saying, hey, here's my fist with a scent sample inside of it. Please do the pawing thing. And where we left it is the dog paw learns to paw you rather than just your fist. When they smell the odor, that's great. But now what we're doing is we're saying, now the dog doesn't really know that it's a scent training session. And we are asking them to detect the odor around you and then paw in the hopes that they get a snack. And that's a really big ask.
Yeah.
Right? Like, yeah.
What I just realized is that not only are we asking a dog to alert on scent, like alone, but we're also asking dogs to alert without the presence of treats. So like,
oh, it's also true.
I specifically have to
good point.
Teach my dog not to work for treats in a deliberate fashion. And yeah. I just realized like, I don't have actually a specific process. Like all my dogs, all the dogs that I train already know how to not, I think, work for treats.
Yeah.
Super like, just because I'm a dog trainer, like
we naturally do that
in a specific way. But I find owners still like, they have to pull out the treat bag. Their dog is still right. I never really thought of it. I literally just talked to my brain. Like, because like I realize we do that, but we already know. We just kind of passively
fade
treats.
We end up doing it
where you fade treats just in our basic obedience and advanced obedience. But
that's a good point.
I realize like then the dog has to work without the knowledge of like a treat is going to come. I never thought about that.
Self-trainers like who aren't professional trainers like naturally to them, they don't think about it yet because, I mean, we haven't talked about it in the book. There would be no reason to.
I'm just thinking of this.
Yeah. Like, so you think of it from the dog's perspective and up until now, the first eight steps, probably the very first step to every single one of those eight steps is mom or dad going to the cabinet and bringing out the dog treats is the first stage.
Yeah, getting your dog comfortable with delayed reinforcement. Mm-hmm. We should probably do a podcast just on delayed reinforcement.
Especially with diabetic alert, right? I mean, that is massive. When it comes to live alerting, I mean, I was just responding to an email where I had a potential client asking me, what happens if we are in the car and we're not able to reward the dog yet? Like, all we can do is treat the low.
Yeah.
And that's a lot of diabetic alert dog training is you have to communicate and be like, yeah, you did a great job. But I want to reinforce that. But like I will in a little bit.
I have to treat myself. And I have to take care of myself, you know.
Or even like if you're in a completely silent environment, it's like, I'm going to reward you, but I'm going to reward you differently. Or we're going to step outside and I'm going to reward you.
Yeah. The less enthusiasm like with Pickles at in classes.
Yeah, yes, in classes.
Because I trained Pickles in my senior year of college, and I would have to give the quietest puppy parties.
Mm-hmm.
Like exactly. It was like quiet, where he's used to be being like ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We should do a podcast just on like the process of delaying reinforcement and setting the dogs up for success.
And the different types of reinforcement. I mean, in this email, I was explaining how in the car – you might reinforce – we're getting off topic here, but
– that's fine. Just go.
Well, that's what podcasts are for. Right. How in the car you might reinforce with tons of verbal praise and tossing cheese sticks in the back, you know, where they're you know, tethered on the seat or in a crate or whatever. But then in a theater environment, you might say, you know what? You don't get any verbal praise for this, but I'll give you cuddles and cheese sticks for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so you just kind of have to tailor it and teach the dog all of these things are reinforcement. Like, this is communicating to you, you did a great job. We want you to do that.
Yeah.
But you have to also tailor it to, like, the human social environment you're in.
Yeah.
And in safety of, like, when you're driving, especially as a parent of a T1D, like, you have to drive. You can't cuddle the dog.
No. Yeah. No, yeah. No, it's, oh, yeah, we should.
Okay. But you've written that down, though. So great.
Yeah, I wrote it down.
Back to alerting based on scent alone. I think how we got off topic with that is now we're teaching the dog to not alert based on the presence of treats as a cue too. Now it's really like
– it is a big transition.
Yeah. They have to take initiative and they have to alert based on scent alone.
You know what I realized that I have done with dogs that I've taken from like zero scent training? Because I've like, you know, like with Mac or whatever, like he already had some history or whatever and like things like that. But I realized with like Pickles and I – would take a little morsel of recognition.
Yes.
But I wouldn't do that. I shaped it, which is a dog training concept that's probably should be a whole different podcast. Yep. But
I could tell he smelled something. Mm-hmm. So knowing dog's behavior and like recognize like he, I tell he was just like just and like breathing just a little bit. And I'd be like, oh my gosh, like what is that? Maybe a little something. But I would only do that like once. Like I would only take that little bit of sniffing and like thinking about it before I would. And I would reward the dog being like, oh, you just yep. recognize the odor. And then I would go and I realized I was teaching delayed reinforcement by them, by Pickles mm-hmm. recognizing. Yeah. And then I required him to like be on the odor and smelling.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'd reward that. And then I required yeah. like a half-hearted paw. And then I would delayed reinforce that one. And then it would be a full paw. And then he mm-hmm. he put the pieces together. Oh gosh. Yeah. Oh, wow. This is a hard step.
Yeah. For it's a hard step. So like we have in here. The second tip that's in, like, the book is if the first time, few times she sniffs in the general area but hesitates to alert, you can encourage her by asking what is it. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of the same concept
yeah,
of
yeah.
look for those cues that says, hey, they've noticed something.
Mm-hmm.
But step 8 to step 9 is a massive jump.
Yeah.
So they need some, like, baby steps.
Yeah.
So I think there can be different baby steps. I think one baby step is what we have in the book, which is saying, hey, you know, what is it? And kind of gently cueing them. Other baby steps are actually just saying, you know what? If they start to show interest, have a puppy party.
Yeah.
Call it a win. And that's what I tend to do now as well, is like more of the shaping methodology where I will actually take that as like a success for yeah. about 3 times.
Yeah.
And then after that, I require them to like show some body language cues of sniffing, mm-hmm. but then like maybe find the source of the odor
yeah.
or something like that.
Yeah.
Or I'm still not requiring them to paw because that's a big step.
Mm-hmm.
But I need them to show more interest
yeah.
because I've built up their confidence.
Mm-hmm.
And then you slowly work up to, yeah. to pawing.
My brain is forcing me to explain shaping really quickly.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So shaping, I'll try to keep it really short. Shaping is you reward stair-step behaviors towards the goal behavior. So if I want my dog to get on a like platform, a really short platform, the stair-step behaviors that lead up to this end behavior of all four paws being on something, I would reward the dog for looking at the mm-hmm. platform. I would reward – so – then I would reward the dog for looking at or like sniffing the platform. Mm-hmm. And then I'd reward them for thinking about putting a paw on it. So like yeah. they kind of lift a paw, maybe like shift their weight towards the platform.
It's then, basically rewarding for progress.
Yeah.
But not like end result.
Yes. You reward this. It's like think about like you're walking up a ladder with your dog, but you mm-hmm. the caveat is that you don't reward the same behavior twice.
Yeah.
So like you don't want to if with our alerting behavior, if we note like, oh, like, okay, double smelled me and mm-hmm. he seemed to get excited. And I'm like, okay, like that's the first time I've ever tried to do step 9. I would be like, yes, like that's great. Like, oh my yeah. gosh, puppy party.
Great.
And then, but then I would never, I don't think, mm-hmm. or not, never is an exaggeration, but the next time I would want him to have like more intense duration or something. Mm-hmm. I would want to have, I'd have to go the next step.
Yeah.
If I kept on rewarding that little I think I smell something. Mm-hmm. Like he doubles like I think I smell something. If I keep rewarding that, then I'm going to get that.
Yeah.
But we want something bigger. We want the big alert. We mm-hmm. want the really clear recognition.
Yeah. Until you get to your end result, and then you reward that every time.
Yes.
And the dog's like, "This is it. This is my behavior."
Okay. Like, step 9 is like shaping.
Yeah. It is shaping.
Shaping and delayed reinforcement.
Mm-hmm. So that's a lot to put into one step, but
yeah. No, I
think we're at right now.
Yeah, no, it's doable, and thankfully dogs are good at problem solving.
Yeah,
but I think breaking up this step into thinking about giving your dog a break
mm-hmm.
and not like fretting if they don't immediately get it, but also just yeah. thinking about dogs, like your dog's body language. Mm-hmm. Like, do they happen to have like a stress response, like a stress yawn? So if yeah. you look into that, or like a itch or something like that. Mm-hmm. Like that may be enough to like,
yeah,
little things like that. I don't know. That's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, even like right before we started this podcast, B sniffed Maggie and showed like intense eye contact. And so Maggie checked her blood sugar to be like, okay, like, is this a behavior that you are showing that you are like recognizing low blood sugar. She was not. Maggie was perfectly fine.
She just loves me.
She just loves Maggie. She probably wanted cuddles. Yeah. But if at that point Maggie had a low scent sample on her, we would reward that as a puppy party. Yeah. We would say, oh my goodness, this is amazing. Great job. Build up that confidence. Teach you that this is a wonderful thing. So that the next time she showed more of a behavior, rather than just like staring up into her soulful eyes, she would maybe do a baby nose nudge, mm-hmm. or maybe sniff her ankles more enthusiastically.
Mm-hmm.
Because at that initial stage, you can't necessarily tell a difference between wanting cuddles and wanting to alert.
Right, yeah.
But that's normal because both of those things are wanting something.
Mm-hmm.
So in the alerting scenario, it's, hey, I want that hot dog from the fridge because I smell the thing that usually means hot dogs. And cuddles means I want cuddles.
Yeah. Yeah.
And not every dog is as needy as spaniels. But it's worth like thinking about where their mindset is,
mm-hmm.
and how you can utilize that and shape it into what you want. So anyways, got a little sidetracked there. But I think it's worth kind of talking about how at the beginning you can also get confused, mm-hmm. of what is the dog trying to communicate. And what you want to do is you want to make sure that if they are by chance communicating a low blood sugar, you reward that. So whether that's a live low blood sugar or a scent sample that you have put in your sock or mm-hmm. rubbed on your ankle, you want to make sure that you reward that because you want to build their confidence right now.
Yeah.
It's not about them being right. So mm-hmm. much of, you know, what bothers me with like working with self-trainers is they feel like every training step is a test.
Yeah.
And it's not a test. It's mm-hmm. teaching, right? It's like teaching a kid addition. You don't teach them by giving them a test and saying, you failed, you failed, you failed, you failed, you failed.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, no, you have to teach them the concept first.
Yeah.
And so many people want to constantly test their dog and say, is this low? Is this mm-hmm. not low? And yeah. it's like, no, you just like tell them, hey, you like your nostrils flared a bit. You seem kind of interested. And mm-hmm. yeah, there was a scent sample on my ankle. Way yeah. to go. Great
yeah.
job.
Yeah, I have a lot of clients that doing any scent work with their dogs, they like an intro class
mm-hmm.
and they are like, I don't think my dog liked it. And I'm like, your dog did like it.
Yeah.
It's just they give such subtle cues.
So subtle.
So yep. subtle. And okay, maybe their dog will not be like the highest level, whatever.
Or scent. Maybe it'll click at some point.
Or will it click? Melly, my Australian Shepherd, who's perfect in every way, except for some ways.
Not to be biased.
No, not to be biased. But no, she did not like scent sorts were not like natural to her. And like she did not, I noticed a moment after we got, it was after our open title of Barn Hunt, where I'm like, oh, this dog likes this.
She likes it.
Like I just kept working on it and just kept plucking along.
Yeah.
And like I think that as owners, we sometimes dog our dogs a little bit more than we should. And I think it's really just about like letting your dog think through, problem solve. It's not, dog training is not linear.
Mm-mm.
And it's just, it takes time for them to process. I think it's, you know, we have to assist them in their processing. But I think giving them a moment, like this step nine, like we mentioned in previous podcasts, this is, you can fly through the beginning, but then you get to this step and then you're like, wow. Okay. Yeah. This step nine is going to take a while.
Mm-hmm.
It's little, just this little. It takes a minute. And I think it's.
And it probably, as you mentioned earlier, should probably be step nine, parts A through like M or N
or Z.
Or Z. Maybe we should have 26 parts to this. But really, like when we rewrite this, we being a loose term, it is going to be multiple steps. There will be more than 14 steps of training a dipeggler dog. Spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert. But I think it's good to break it all up.
And it will be broken up. Mm-hmm. Like I do – this one is a hard one. This one is the one that I get the most consults probably about.
Yeah.
Is, you know, this one of like my dog just isn't getting it.
Yeah.
And I think probably a lot of people fail
mm-hmm.
Because you don't quite understand how to break it up.
Yeah.
And, I mean, like, to be fair, the book doesn't say how to break it up.
Yeah.
So, you know.
I had a consult with a poodle with MD – it was MD Dogs consult. And mm-hmm. Working with the dog was doing pretty well and everything. And there's this moment where the dog, like,
came into the room, the type 1 diabetic, and just like started just kind of being goofier. Like this is a quite serious dog.
Yep.
And was just kind of being a little bit goofier and stuff like that. And then thankfully the client, I've coached them. They're like, your dog is not the most enthusiastic individual, which is fine. But they checked and he was right.
Wow.
But like it wasn't a clear alert that the dog had an alert on a scent sample, but it was just a little bit of a different behavior change that the client was like, hey, I guess we'll just check and see.
Yeah.
And then the dog was right. And then they built the dog's confidence.
Yep.
And in that moment while the dog was problem solving, like the dog didn't know how to communicate
because
there's still, even though we've taught the paw and everything, it's different when it's just based on scent alone. And that communication is like, you have to build their confidence. You have to like let them know like, that is what I want.
Yep.
So looking for behavior changes, if your dog is actually like a little weird and you're doing scent training stuff, just like, just check.
Just check. Or if you have a scent sample out, count it.
Yeah.
That, I mean, because I think behavior changes in live alerts, that's step 12 or 14 or I don't know, something. And is a whole probably other episode to go along with this. Like how to recognize those is very different. So if you have opened a scent sample and suddenly your dog starts acting ridiculous or like just different, that's probably your dog's initial alert.
Yeah. So what if they just don't know?
They don't know. It's your job to teach them.
Yeah.
If they were born knowing, you wouldn't be reading this book and you certainly wouldn't be listening to this podcast.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. I mean,
I had a dog that in class for Barn Hunt, every time he'd find a rat, he would start doing zoomies.
Okay, that's pretty funny.
And so but we started basically capturing.
So we started,
like, as soon as he started zooming, we started rewarding it to the point where the dog does not zoom anymore. And the dog actually, like, alerts.
Wow.
It took, like, six
so funny.
Classes. He gets so excited because he was like, oh, my gosh. Mm-hmm. I know he had a beautiful alert. I could literally have this dog paw 20 times before getting a treat. Beautiful delayed reinforcement outside of the ring. But as soon as he got in, he was like, oh, my gosh. Like, I found it.
I did it.
So excited. Yeah. He'd sprint. But as long as we, like, I ended up having it where I would – capture his initial sniff. Like, I know where the rat is, and I put it out.
Yeah.
I would capture that until the point where we got to the point where he would alert on it. But he was just – he started being goofy.
Yep.
And, like, because he was really, really excited. He was a really lovely little golden doodle.
Hilarious.
And, like, he just – yeah. And so, like, basically me capturing the moment where he smelled it before he got too weird was really good. But goofy.
Goofy.
Like, he was – I found it. Yay!
Yeah.
Like –
And, yeah, I mean, I think that's a huge point is I think sometimes when we are training diabetic alert dogs, and I know that I was guilty of this when I first trained my first couple, is you almost take it too seriously, right? Where you're like, if in the end, what I want the dog to do is to alert when I'm 80 and below and their alert is a single paw to my thigh.
Yeah.
And so what we don't want – what we think we don't want to do is like, I don't want to alert, you know, reward the dog for having the zoomies when they smell it. But the reality is that we want to reward the enthusiasm and the recognition. Because once we reward that, once they have the confidence to respond to that, it's super easy to just change that into a paw behavior or a nose nudge or a brings alert, like whatever. That's fine. What we need is the indication and like, or the recognition prior to the indication.
Yeah. Step 9 should be like, recognition.
Yeah, exactly.
Like step 9A.
Yeah, part A. Part A of Z.
A through Z. Yeah. No, Harry, the owner would get so frustrated at Harry.
I bet.
His name is Harry.
Haley, I love Harry. That's funny.
And we get so frustrated at him. Like, he's just not doing it right. But I convinced her to keep just taking classes. And like, Harry obviously likes it.
Yeah.
If
getting the zoomies.
Literally, he loved Barn Hunt. He just didn't know how to, like, contain his joy. And so it was very, very good. And I'm glad the client was persistent and, like, trusted me in the process of, like, just keep on going.
Yeah. Just keep doing it.
Just keep doing it. Yeah. You just got to keep on going.
And it's the same thing with diabetic alert dog training. Is just keep on going. Keep working on it. You gradually teach them what you want them to do.
Yeah.
Over many, many, many repetitions. But they're not going to get it right away. Otherwise, everybody would have a diabetic alert dog.
And it'd be really easy.
If it was that easy, everybody would have one, and they would be like $100 and not $20,000.
Yeah, because it's so much work. It's catching those little behaviors. Yeah. But I think it's just important to recognize, like, you know your dog.
Yeah.
You know how your dog acts. You know whenever mm-hmm. – if you – while you're doing this, all your scent training, just kind of keep an eye on, like, what is your dog's behavior?
Yep.
Little wiggles that they do, mm-hmm. little things like that. Mm. Knowing what their behavior is, and yep. then that'll help you to be able to navigate them through this step.
Yeah. And the one thing, because we should move on, but the one thing I would add is do exactly that. Recognize their behaviors when you open up a scent sample and you do the step 9. Reward it, shape it, gradually work on getting them to have the confidence to paw. But at the same time, recognize those initial behaviors they show and then make note of that mentally, because with you all, you're self-trainers. I'm assuming most of the people are watching this or listening to this are self-trainers. Make note of that, because those are the behaviors that your dog is going to show when you are actually low, mm-hmm. because that is their innate behavior. It's not necessarily a trained behavior. So you have to work on training the alert behavior. Mm-hmm. But their innate behavior is going to be something like zoomies.
Like zoomies.
Or like intense staring. Or being goofy.
Yeah.
Like these are all things that your dog is reacting. Mm-hmm. Like this is how they naturally react.
Yeah.
And so once you get to especially like step 9, if you start realizing in day-to-day life, you know, sometimes like my dog randomly gets the zoomies. Check your blood sugar. Like for real.
Yeah.
Because they might be having the zoomies randomly because you're actually low, and then you want to have a puppy party.
Mm-hmm.
And that's later, but go on and read the rest of the steps for how to do that. But like just keep note of those things for step 9 of how mm-hmm. your dog naturally responds before they have the confidence to do this like beautiful proper paw or nose nudge or whatever that you're working on.
Yeah, that's a very good point.
So anyways, and most likely this is your dog's like almost default behavior.
Yeah.
So take note of the default behavior
mm-hmm.
and still reward that, especially when it comes to lives, because step 9 is where I have the most issue, where mm-hmm. I have people come to me with the most issues, but live alerts are the other place where people come to me with the most issues.
Yeah, because the dog is just not quite certain.
Because it smells totally different.
Yeah.
Like, because it's like, what in the world? There's no cotton on this thing.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that's a big difference.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
And it's like coming from all over you.
Yeah. We should do the podcast on just like.
So far, we've come up with like 5 podcast topics in this one podcast.
I love it. No, this is great.
But this is good.
Nobody's
submitting podcast topics. So at least we're submitting our own.
We're submitting our own. Like, this is a great thing to get over. Because no, I remember as a baby trainer, like, I had these questions.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And like, I had these thoughts and I had these processes. Yep. And.
I was so much of a baby trainer. I didn't have these questions because I was that naive. But we learn and we grow.
You were also a teenager at the time.
I was also 15.
Yes. Right. I was, I don't know how old I was whenever I trained Pickles.
Sometimes, yeah, it goes both ways.
Yeah, no, exactly. No, that's, it's important to step back and, you know, think about everything. And we always, as baby trainers, we always think that we know everything. And now that it's kind of like, the Einstein quote, like the people that know.
Oh yeah. What is it?
The people that know like nothing or like a little bit about something, they think they know everything about it. But the people that are actually experts and realize they know nothing.
Nothing. Exactly. That's so relatable.
I'm like, I'm an amazing dog trainer, but I think I know nothing sometimes.
Mm-hmm. I'm sitting here as we're discussing this, we're talking about how we need to like rewrite all of these steps and they're all wrong.
It's not that they're wrong. The steps are not wrong. It's just that for like, I think that they could be broken down more.
I would agree. Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's the wrong. Your wrongness is incorrect, Livy.
Okay. Well, you know, details.
It's breaking things down into like tiny steps mm-hmm. for, because like as trainers, we can read those steps
we can infer, and naturally we're going to shape a behavior for step 9
mm-hmm.
and we're going to break it into 26 steps for our dogs.
Yep.
But a self-trainer who's a mom of 5 and has a 3-year-old type 1 diabetic doesn't know that, because that's not her job.
No,
her job is to keep 5 children alive.
Exactly. Exactly. And I think that's something that we'll talk about and maybe, you know, modify somewhat. But I think it's – I mean,
It'll be fine. As for, we'll move away from this step because we spent a long time on it.
I don't know that we actually gave answers other than break it into your own 26 steps. Good luck.
Livy is in the process of making a new version, and that will come out at some point. Livy does have a full-time job outside of MD Dogs. Thanks. And so this, and no, but the goal of this podcast is that we can put out things that are more you know, current in the sense current of like
and, and almost like unfinished of like thought processes.
This is a thought process podcast
and the, exactly
we're wanting to give our thoughts as trainers that have trained multiple diabetic alert dogs and are things that we would maybe add to the MD Dogs.
Things already that are slightly wrong, but
it's because the thing is, the more dogs you train, the more knowledge you get.
That's true.
Like how many you've trained, I don't know, a billion diabetic alert dogs now?
And billion might be a little bit of
a billion is an exaggeration. But it takes time and it's a process.
And the more clients you work with.
Yeah, the more clients.
I think that's part
also,
of it.
Also, the questions that clients have, like I bring up Byron Hunt a lot because this is, I work with tons of clients each week on Byron Hunt and it's a scent-based sport. And actually this gives me information that I can pull from about diabetic alert dogs that they would have.
Yeah, that's true. I feel like this, the current MD Dogs book video series is kind of almost written for trainers accidentally of like as a trainer. Yeah, I stand by it. They can infer. They can infer how to shape step nine.
I trained Pickles to be a very fine diabetic alert dog with these steps years and years ago.
Exactly. But the more people I interact with through self-training, my whole goal with this, like, you know, with the MD Dogs community that Maggie and I are part of and all the clients we work with for consults, what we're seeing is like these are different steps that people have issues with and difficulties with. So if we are going to create this for self-trainers, we can make it easier. It's never going to be easy. It's always going to be hard to some extent. Yeah. But we can make it at least easier and more easily understood where you don't have to be an expert trainer to understand how to shape, you know, step nine, for example.
Exactly.
But we've talked about shaping step nine, and I think you get the gist of it. Probably talk to a trainer because it's kind of complicated.
It's a process. It's a process.
And, it's a process.
And the next version will have a more steps.
We'll make it better.
Okay, moving on to step 10, which is testing the dog's understanding. I am going to hand the reins over to Livy.
Great.
On this one.
Step 10. Skip it. It's not necessary. Don't do it.
Yeah, this step I find is, the more I learn about scent-based things you do with your dog, is the more I realize there needs to be more and just more.
Okay.
And Libby can explain what that means. Step 10.
I'm going to like do this since we're 44 minutes into this or something.
Really good for that. For us, honestly.
Pretty good for us. If we keep it under an hour, we are golden. So step 10, the gist of it is what it says is you're solidifying the dog's understanding. So you are putting a scent tin with a low blood sugar in it and a scent tin with, I think it's actually no blood sugar in it, like no sample, putting it in front of the dog, rewarding the dog for alerting the one that has the low blood sugar in it. As far as like logic goes, it makes sense. You're testing the dog. You're saying, hey, do you understand this or not? In actual dog training, that's not how it works. Because up until this point, every time that you have presented your fist with a scent tin in it to your dog, they have been expected to paw it and receive reinforcement. So now you're presenting two to them. And so in their history, 100% of the time when they paw your fist or a scent tin, they receive reinforcement. So they're going to paw whichever one that seems most natural. We have not taught them to discriminate between odors. We have not taught them the concept of sniff this one and sniff this one and only paw this one. Like, this is kind of an unfair step. This is something that was kind of created when I was a medium baby trainer. I went to a conference. It was a good thing. It made a lot of sense. I did it with a dog. The dog kind of got it, but it was a sample size of one. I've done it with more dogs since then. it confuses them. And turns out you can teach it without it.
I think, I mean, I get your logic of like, oh yeah, like let's proof the behavior just a little bit in the sense, almost like you're wanting, like, I imagine your goal was like, let's eliminate, because clients come to you where they are like, oh, the dog is positive sentient. I feel like you almost created this as a way to assist clients and not actually the dog.
Yep. And I think it was kind of created because I was like, there's this expert who does this, and so I'm going to do it too. And looking back, it's not. But it's, you're right. It's exactly what clients want because clients want to see my dog is not pawing the scent in. Because I promise you, I have so many clients that get a step two even, and they're like, my dog's just alerting to the scent tin. It's like, I know. That's part of the training process.
That's the thing.
That is okay.
That's okay.
So this stage is kind of about like, hey, showing them, showing, it's not even about showing them. It's about showing the client that they are teaching the dog to not alert to the incorrect one.
Yeah.
But it's not actually teaching the dog anything, because instead all it does is it sets the dog up for failure.
Yeah.
Which is not fair. So.
Yeah. No, I do stuff all the time to make the client feel better.
Yeah.
And not necessarily the dog portion, because they, like, clients want to say things to their dog. So I'll, like, add in cues that they can put to their dog, even though technically I think it's way better to not say anything to your dog.
Yep.
So,
exactly. I think there's certain things that we do as trainers to make our clients feel more confident. Because the funny thing about training as a dog trainer is you are constantly working on building your dog's confidence, but you're also working on building your client, human client's confidence.
Oh gosh. All of my day is spent training clients and not dogs.
Positive reinforcement.
Positive reinforcement.
You're doing such a great job.
Clients. That is my entire job. I have a bachelor's in human communication specifically because I was a dog trainer while I was getting my degree. And I realized, like, wow, this is all about the human and very little about the dog.
It's very little about the dog.
And so that is, I agree with the step in the sense of like a client perspective, but from a dog training perspective, this is almost like, And I hesitate to say this word in front of you, but it's like almost like a mediocre version of the scent wheel.
Yeah, actually, though, kind of.
So it's like you're like trying to prep the dog for the scent wheel and like ignoring like the either the clear, not tubes, scent
the tins, the clean ones,
The clean ones versus the actual one that has the correct odor. Yeah. And that's, I think you're like, you're trying to prep, I feel like, clients for that, but it's not doing injustice for the dog.
It doesn't, exactly. It doesn't help the dog. It makes the client feel better, except that once they get through this, then their dog fails. And then they're like, what did I do the last 9 steps for? My dog doesn't understand what they're doing.
Yeah.
Because as I mentioned, like up until now, 100% of the times that you presented something to your dog, you expected them to paw it.
Mm-hmm.
So you could present anything without a low blood sugar in it and the dog's going to paw it, as they should.
Mm-hmm.
Because you think of it from the dog's perspective. I mean, it's the same thing with learning a new language.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many things. I mean, I took a lot of linguistics classes in college and we talked about how, you know, you can have somebody pointing to a bunny running across a field and you can say, bunny. And then there could be a kid there who doesn't know anything about English. And the bunny could mean point. It can mean green. It can mean grass. It could be outside. It could be literally a million things, a million concepts that this word bunny could be other than bunny.
Yeah.
That's either. And it's the same thing with dog training. Mm-hmm. So you have up until now rewarded 100% of the times that you have presented something in front of the dog and the dog has pawed it. So now you're presenting 2 things in front of the dog and you're saying, why are you not pawing the right one? It's like, well, because it's the first time. They don't know what they're doing. Because up until now, you haven't taught them what they're doing.
Yeah.
So we're going to teach them what they're doing in, I think maybe step 11. Is that the scent wheel? Yeah. Step 11 is the scent wheel. And that's where we teach them. But step 10, completely unnecessary. Don't do it. Get a big red marker. Exit out.
Say, yeah.
Libby's learned a lot since she wrote this book.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's the more dog you train, the more information you get.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and that's just fact. Mm-hmm. Like, anytime I'm working with a dog, every single dog I train gives me new knowledge.
Yeah.
And that's 100% a part of the process.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. I think that's enough to say about.
I think so too. I think, you know, that's enough. Basically skip it. I haven't done it with any of the dogs I've actually been training recently. I don't remember the last dog that I did this with, probably mm-hmm. Philly, who this video series was created with.
Yeah.
But skip it. So we just made your life easier.
Yeah. Right.
It's not 13 steps to scent training your diabetic alert dog.
No. Step nine is
A through Z. So 13 plus like 25.
Exactly. And yeah, no, it's a process.
Training
your diabetic alert dog for this it takes time.
Yep.
Awesome. Okay. We will end.
And that's great.
We'll end there.
Yeah.
And then the next podcast, we are going to go over the scent wheel a bit more in depth, which I know this is also different than the book. Libby does it very differently now than she does whenever she did it with the book.
Yeah.
In the sense of getting the dog comfortable with the scent wheel and understanding finding the odor.
Yeah.
And we'll go into that in our next podcast.
Yeah, next one. So stick around.
Yeah. We did a podcast really recently, and so
I don't think there's anything new.
There's nothing new.
There's been like 4 days.
There's a bunch of puppies, and there's a bunch of dogs. Yeah. And some are available, and some are not. And there's a
pick your puppy.
Right, there's puppies being imprinted.
Yeah,
using Libby's imprinting MD Dogs method, and will be available this summer.
Mid-May if you don't want a diabetic alert dog puppy, and mid-July if you do want a diabetic alert dog puppy.
Yeah, not to plug sport dogs, but it's going to be a really, really cool sport dog.
It'll be a fun sport
dog. If you are just wanting a dog that is going to be enthusiastic about any sport that you desire, frisbee,
pick your sport. They want to do it all.
Any scent sports, agility, like the dogs are going to be gung-ho about it all. So if you're not looking for a diabetic alert dog, this is also an option. Or you want a dual purpose.
Dual purpose is also fun.
Right?
You'll go to the top of my list if you want a dual purpose one.
Right? As a sport person, this is dual purpose because you can do agility and have a diabetic alert
dog. Yeah, that's a win-win.
Right? Exactly.
Yeah.
But yeah, that is all that we have today.
Back for the scent wheel.
And, yeah.
Probably a couple days or something. We'll put it up.
Yeah. And at least in the next week or something, we're going to put something up. We're trying to roll through these pretty quickly so everyone has information on it.
Yep. All the scent training steps. And in the coming, 12 to 18 months, we'll come up with an MD Dogs 3.0.
Exactly.
Which might be an app. Fun fact.
Ooh.
Yeah.
That's to be determined.
Exciting. We'll see.
We'll see
what we work with.
Right.
Okay. Till next time.
Till next time.
As always, feel free to join the MD Dogs training community on Facebook. It's free. You can just join as long as you look up the free mddogs.org online PDF book. You can answer the questions for what content is on what page, just so we don't get a bunch of scammers in there.
Yeah.
So you can do that. Or you can also email us at mddogsinc@gmail.com. Whether you have questions and you want to set up a consult with me or Maggie, you're welcome to do that. Or if you have topics you want us to talk about for the podcast, you can do that through email or on that Facebook group.
Awesome. Okay. All right. We'll let you guys go.
Okay. See you next time.
All better.